0876 026.
The Daily
with Dave Hodgson on Talk Radio Europe.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. I'm delighted to have Tony Gosling on the line. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, lots of stuff happening in the news, and we're going to first of all touch on breaking news at the moment, George Osborne's autumn statement. What do you make of that?
Well, $30 billion, it looks like they're going to have to borrow extra above and beyond what the Labour Party was saying, what they were projecting for their economic plans. Mm. Of course, the other thing that's appeared in the middle of all of this is this prospect of Eurogeddon. And we've had various people today, including the Shadow Chancellor, questioning everything, because they're saying, well, look, if Eurogeddon happens, all of these predictions are way out.
What's Eurogeddon, Tony? Sorry.
Eurogeddon is the euro going down. Mm. You know, everyone's... And we had some news a couple of weeks ago from in The Guardian that the British Treasury were preparing an Armageddon plan for if the euro goes down.
Yeah.
I mean, they call it an Armageddon plan. Hopefully there's not nuclear missiles flying around, but just we're talking about the meltdown of the euro. I mean, there's a lot of analysts now saying that the best thing would be for the Germans simply to leave the euro and let the rest of Europe, which has broadly similar economies, not so efficient as the Germans, manage things. But the Germans clearly aren't going to do that. At the moment, that seems to be the way. So this whole question mark hanging over the future of the euro leaves a big question mark, not just over the eurozone, but over Britain and the United States and other related economies.
Funny you should say that, Tony. It's been going out on our station today from Howard Broughton, who does this Spanish news, that the British, that it's been reported, we're not sure how secure this knowledge is, but it's been reported that the British embassies and those that work here in Spain and in Europe are having plans made up for if the euro goes down, how are they going to deal with their British citizens abroad and so on. And so, interesting.
A very real possibility. I mean, this is a quote of the day today in the IA newspaper, the Independent sort of brief version for 20p that we sell over here in the UK. Mervyn King is saying, none of us really know the scale of the shocks that could come out of the euro area. It could be worse than we can imagine. That's from Sir Mervyn King, or the guy I call King Mervyn, because I just imagine him sitting there in his throne with all these various servants waiting on him.
Printing up money.
he's the modern equivalent of a kind of king, because the money in Britain certainly does seem to call the shots. The market, as we know, in places like Greece and in Italy, are now choosing prime ministers, whereas the people are really supposed to do that job. And so the money people, it seems to me, are the sort of new barons. You know, we've had the media barons, and we've still got some of those, like Mr. Murdoch. But actually, it's the money barons, I think, that are the most powerful at the moment.
And, I mean, people are talking about this, I forgot what they called it now, but the sovereignty of each nation, a bringing together of Europe, a bringing together where it's all under, so it's like a United States of Europe. And that's very much in the talking at the moment amongst commentators.
Quite clearly, I think this has been the plan right from the start with the European Union, as it was originally the coal and steel community after the Second World War. Slowly but surely, they've been trying to, I mean, this is basically the Eurocrats, have been trying to bring together Europe as one political unit. And the way to do this, of course, to bounce the individual sovereign countries into this is through basically through bullying, through finance. And if you can actually bully a currency, a country, I nearly said company there, into because a lot of these are now managed rather like companies. If you can do that, to actually get them to give up their own currency and to go over to the euro, as they've done with the Irish punts, with the Greek drachmas and all the rest of the euro currencies, that's the first step to actually having political union. Because actually the main job of politicians nowadays is managing budgets. So that, you know, particularly now we're seeing budgets shrinking.
Yeah.
By far the most of their energy is spent on this, that actually managing these falling budgets and trying to do the best for the people. It's kind of crisis management, and that's what most politicians are doing. And of course, that puts all of the initiative, you know, if you think of it as a sort of chess game, all of the initiative is in the hands of high finance right now.
So really, I mean, as you said earlier, technocrats are actually deciding, in the markets that are deciding, who's going to be leading the nations. And now we even see in Italy where there isn't even a politician amongst those that are in Parliament. You know, it's an amazing turn of events, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think that this has been brewing for a long time. There are a lot of these big high-level think tanks. I mean, the way I see the bankers right now, I mean, I think they've really lost touch with ordinary people, and they're living in this quite a dangerous sort of separate world. Unfortunately, there's no kind of input from ordinary people into the way they think at all. And what they do is they tend to meet up in things like the Brookings Institute, the Bilderberg Conference, places where the ordinary people are nowhere near allowed. I mean, the press are kept, like, usually about a mile away from the venue. And this is where a lot of their networking and decision-making actually goes on, way away from the eyes of the public and certainly from the press. And it's very difficult when the press turn up to an event like this. They're kept a mile away. All they can do is shoot a picture of a hotel and a few flags waving. So generally speaking, the press don't turn up because they're excluded. The danger of this, of course, is that you end up with two completely separate political discourse, a different discourse. You end up with a discourse that the bankers are having about what they're going to do with their money, and a public discourse. But the real problem with the bankers, I think, is that it's just simply greed. We've ended up with a system, a capitalist system, which can, not always, but it can propel the most greedy to the top of companies and to these companies. And what happens then is they get their, you know, their luxury yachts, they get their massive houses in three different continents, and what do they want then? They want more and more power. They tend to go for buying up newspapers, this kind of thing, and also to take over the whole of anything to do with financing, public finance. They're gunning for that as well.
Yes.
So I think, in a way, we've seen a little bit like what's happened with Occupy Wall Street in the US, where the authorities have started turning their fire, quite literally, with pepper spray and all this kind of thing, on ordinary people. We're seeing the similar kind of thing with the bankers in Europe, actually saying, well, cocking a snook, really, at the rest of us, and saying, well, we're just going to do it our way.
Do you feel, Tony, this is going to escalate, you know, with the Occupy Wall Street and what's happening outside St. Paul's in London? Do you feel this is going to escalate? Because there's a groundswell of support for these those that are out there, those that are on strike this week as well, and those that are saying, actually, no, we've had enough of the establishment telling us what we can and can't do, and us seeing the rich get richer and richer and richer. Are we going to see more? Is this just a foretaste of what's to come?
Possibly, but I mean, I think we do things slightly differently here in Britain. I mean, we've had on this strike tomorrow, it's quite clear that the entire public sector that are coming out tomorrow are doing so with absolutely a just cause. What's happened is their pension pots are basically, they're just being told, we are going to take something like an extra 6 to 10% of your pension money out of your pot, even though it's your money, and there's nothing you can do about it. Now, this is why we've seen the first strike in the history of the National Association of Head Teachers of over 120 years, is because they can see that it's simply robbery.
Yes.
They're stealing. They're using their position as an elected government, actually abusing that position and using it to rob people's pots. I don't know, I mean, these pension pots, this is why we're seeing, I mean, you know, these are educated people. Head teachers tend to be pretty well educated, and they are certainly not going to go on strike if they don't think that there is a really important principle of justice involved. So that's why I think this strike is going to be so big tomorrow. It's because the government, I think, that George Osborne has made a massive mistake in trying to rob this money simply to make it look like he is doing a better job with the economy, to take a bit of money off of the teachers' pensions to try and, paper over the cracks of his meltdown of an economy. And it really is a meltdown. I mean, one of the things that the Office of Budget Responsibility, that they could say it's independent, and I'm not quite so sure about that, this is a new government department, is now saying is that disposable income next year is going to be down around about 2.5%, which means, you know, not only are people having trouble now paying bills, but it's going to be 2.5% more difficult for everybody on average in Britain next year. So what does that tell us? That is actually the worst figure year since the Second World War. It's the lowest, it's the post-war record of declining disposable income in Britain. So
it's not looking good, is it?
Well, anyone that thought that George Osborne was doing a good job by sort of getting Britain to pull its boots up is now realising actually what's happening is he's making things worse.
Well, Tony, if anybody's ever in doubt on how you feel about it, you've certainly got it off your chest. Now, we're going to come back in a few minutes. We're going to have an advert break in the meantime, and we're going to come back and just touch briefly upon, if you get time, Iran and Syria and possibly the Leveson inquiry as well. So I've got a quick call coming in, and I'm going to take this because I know the person. So, hi, Sharon, just go on there.
Hello, good afternoon, Tony. It's lovely to hear you, Tony. I'm feeling a bit depressed from a discussion we had at lunchtime today where some of the panel seemed to think it was all right for a banker to go into a lap dancing club in London and brag about his massive windfall and spend £37,000 in one evening. They thought it was all right because he was spending his money and boosting the economy. I'm just getting over that now. Have you heard of and there are also politicians are continuing. So I've heard some reputable political commentators say that what the politicians are doing to get us out of this mess won't ever work. Austerity measures don't work because the amount of money they save pales into insignificance compared with what the bankers have done. Quantitative easing doesn't work because it causes inflation. And central banks don't work because they just play havoc with people's money.
Yes, Sharon.
Yes, well, I totally agree with you. I think the thing is, though, I mean, let's look for the solutions that are not being offered to the rest of us. I mean, this is the frightening thing.
Hmm. Sharon, thanks for your call. Sharon, say goodbye to you there. Carry
on. Can I talk about that, Dave?
Yeah, carry on.
The solutions, effectively, are that we need to actually collapse, allow these banks to collapse and take them over. That is to say, to allow the governments, the various treasuries, to take over the running of these cash points, take them out of these banks' private hands. Because unfortunately, the banks and all private businesses, including things like private elderly people's care homes, the bottom line is profit. And there are certain things that we should not be running as just pure for-profit organisations. One of them is our national economy. It shouldn't be being run for the benefit of private directors of private banks.
No.
So that's one of the first things. And just the idea of forgiving debt. Debt is not something which is really very fair, especially when people are paying massive amounts of interest. You'll find that very often it's the poorest people that are paying the highest levels of interest. And so what we can do is just simply have a debt moratorium, as the Bible suggests in the Jubilee, which is every 7 years.
15 years.
Reshares out the resources again, and just to make sure that everybody has got access to resources, whether that means money or whether it's land, a workshop that you can work, a home, somewhere to walk. Everybody needs these things, and what's happening is that those resources that we all need to share are being slowly hoarded by a tiny elite. And I'm really worried about Mr. Osborne, because I wonder if he couldn't be kind of following in the footsteps of an 18th century chancellor called Sir Francis Dashwood. Francis Dashwood was part of something called the Hellfire Club, which was based in High Wycombe, where a load of top politicians, it was a big scandal of the day, were found to be cavorting with prostitutes and doing all sorts of naughty stuff quietly. Now, that Chancellor Dashwood was only in office for a couple of years because it was found that he was cutting far too much from the national economy, and what with this scandal breaking as well, they kicked him out. So it seems that he's almost following in the footsteps of this 18th century Chancellor Sir Francis Dashwood. There's a big problem with all this because there is a similar kind of organisation which Osborne is part of, and that's called the Bullingdon Club, which is an Oxford and Eton.
Okay, Tony, we've got another call coming in, so I'm just going to stop you mid-flow there. Hi,
yeah,
Steve.
Hello, my name's Steve from Sutton Hill Soul.
Yeah. What's your question for Tony?
I do agree with Sharon, who called up just recently.
Yeah.
And as I've made previous comments on the show, I'm just a bit concerned myself that this latest commentator is stating the fact that if the government took things over, that they did it with Northern Rock and then end up giving it away some little money.
Mm.
Okay. So, at the end of the day, what is the answer?
Yeah.
Well, I know what you're saying.
Listen to me, anybody.
Okay, thanks, Steve, for your call.
I totally Yeah, I understand the comment and the question, but the thing is, the private banks are far more predatory even than the Treasury. I mean, you might find that difficult to believe, but the Treasury at least is in part accountable to the people for its actions, and there's a whole load of civil servants working in the Treasury to try and make sure that the national economy survives, whereas the private banks, they can actually see money to be made. This is particularly these big investment bank arms of the private banks. They can see large, vast amounts of money to be made from a kind of Armageddon-type meltdown situation. But this is exactly what the Treasury is trying to avoid, but the private banks want it because they can make money at it. So, I mean, whilst we might not like the likes of Lloyds and Barclays and these high street names, actually it would be much better if the Treasury was in the driving seat running things, because at the moment the private banking sector is almost like parasitic, preying on the downfall, praying for the downfall of the economy so they can use it to make a fortune.
Okay, Tony, we've literally got about a minute and a half, and so just your views on the Leveson inquiry, quite some amazing testimonies coming out over the last few days. What's your view on this?
Well, I mean, it started off, didn't it, as an inquiry into phone hacking. Then Lord Leveson was appointed. Now, Leveson is a close friend of the Murdoch family. He's been to the ones that we know, at least two intimate parties at Elizabeth Murdoch and the Freud family house. So he's a friend of the family. Also, Matthew Freud and his PR agency, Freud, has offered to give several of his employees for free to Lord Leveson in the run-up to this inquiry to do some work for him. So clearly, Leveson is not the right man, but the main problem I have with all this is that it's now focusing on celebrity, which is what all the media tend to do, which is really irritating. Mm. People like Sally Dowler, who was so horribly wronged, ordinary members of the public, are being left out, and as are, so far anyway, the 7/7 victims' families, the 9/11 victims' families who were hacked, and the whole thing, it seems to me, is the attempt to get this away from a concentration on Rupert Murdoch, who really is the height of the problem in Britain, because he leads the way in all these kind of activities which many people see as criminal, and the other newspapers know that unless they do a similar thing, this is the trouble, that they won't be able to keep up with the Murdoch empire. So I think what needs to happen is we need to refocus back onto this actual criminal phone hacking, and less of these kind of announcements by celebrity actually about things which are perfectly legal. The problem is the illegal activity, the criminal activity, intelligence gathering of the Murdoch empire. That's the real problem.
Yeah, and you know, the whole debate comes up on, you know, when you become a celebrity, when you are famous, that you do court the media to some degree anyway.
Well, this is a PR, this is a public relations dream for a lot of these celebrities. The public relations people that run the public images of these celebrities love any opportunity like this kind of Leveson inquiry to appear in public, to sit, to explain how it's dreadful. I've been chased down the road by photographers and, you know, isn't it awful? Actually, that is what happens in a free society. Photographers may well, chase you down the road.
Tony, what happened to Anne Diamond is a little bit beyond what should happen, you know.
Yeah, certainly there shouldn't be intrusion right into somebody's house, certainly not, or in their garden and their private property. And certainly, you know, that sort of thing, and physical contact between, that's actually a criminal offence.
That's illegal, isn't it? That is illegal, full stop.
That's a criminal offence anyway. Yeah. So this is, in a way, is an attempt to sort of smudge the whole debate that's been going on about press freedom. And I worry, and I think this is what they're heading for eventually, is that they want to actually bring curbs on the way that the press covers the rich and powerful and celebrities. And I think that's actually the wrong way of looking at it. Really, you have a sliding scale. Ordinary people, like the Dowler family, deserve far, far more protection than the celebrities and the rich and powerful, the bankers, etc. I'd like to see more, in fact, intrusion into the top bankers' private lives, and also into the way that they their lifestyle, the sometimes hypocrisy of what they're saying and what they're doing. For example, this happens quite a lot with the rich and powerful, is that they are saying one thing and doing something completely different. I'd like to know about that.
Tony,
because these people have far more responsibility than the people like the Dowler family.
Tony, we're going to have to leave it there, but you make some very valid points, and I'm sure people like that have got no problem in knowing exactly what you think on these issues, and I'm sure a lot of people out there agree.
Thanks, Dave. And if you've got 5 minutes, check out this Hellfire Club from the 18th century. It's just uncanny, the similarity between Francis Dashwood and what George Osborne is trying to do now. It's incredible.
Fantastic. Tony from Bilderberg.org, have a look at his website. Thanks, Tony. Speak to you soon.
Thanks, Dave.
Speak to you soon. Take care now. And you can get more information from Bilderberg.org. And that's Tony. Comes on a regular basis and just giving his viewpoint on what's happening in the news at the moment. Also, just speaking to Tony Gosling there. And if you want to get more, go to thisweek.org.uk and you'll find more information on what he's been talking about as well, about the economy, amongst other things, and phone hacking and all that. Okay, let's get the latest from sports media.